Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:59 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is September 20th, and China Evergrande is certainly making headlines in here today. It was down another 10% today, and we're certainly looking at the potential for a bankruptcy. So the Chinese market is shut today and tomorrow, and then Hong Kong is going to be shut on Wednesday. So the first day this week that the Chinese markets are all going to be open is going to be on Thursday. And that is also happened to be the day that China Evergrande is expected, or scheduled at least, to make some coupon payments on some of its debt. So Thursday is going to be an awfully big day for China Evergrande, and it's quite likely that if a bankruptcy is going to occur, it's this week. And then, of course, then the mainland market is going to be shut for all of the first week of August as well. So we're certainly in the holiday season, then there are fewer people at their desks, and it's certainly a time when lots of people in China think about taking a vacation. So it's also a quiet time in markets, and obviously an important time for short sellers, because they get to express a view. And we're certainly starting to see evidence of some contagion. So the Chinese market was shut today, and we had the downside key reversal on the Shanghai Properties Index last week. And then we definitely saw some contagion coming through in the Hang Seng Properties Index today. It was down in a dynamic manner, and some of the largest property companies on the island were down in excess of 10%. But it is now breaking down from this range. It was testing the lower side of the range last week, definitely breaking down in here this week, and potentially coming back down to test the lows from 2016 and 2014. But we can also just think about the trajectory over the last decade. There's no questioning that it's gone up. Going from 10,000 to 45,000 is a significant advance. But it's been incredibly choppy and difficult to make money from it. So there's been a lot of back and forth trading, and now we have clearly broken the upward bias. We have clearly broken the sequence of higher reaction lows, however one might want to define that, and there's certainly scope for additional downside. It's not just because of China Evergrande, it's also because there is talk of introducing some of the controls on property speculation to Hong Kong that have already been implemented on the mainland. Of course, that's a further example of how Hong Kong is, I hesitate to call it slowly but surely, because it's happening at a rather fast clip, but turning Hong Kong into just another Chinese city. So these are significant events, and of course the $300 billion outstanding in China Evergrande debt does beg the question, who owns that debt? And it's primarily going to be Western institutions, because that was all US dollar denominated borrowing rather than borrowing in the mainland. And of course, this is also it's representative of some of the prohibitions on liquidity that some of these companies have had, that they were forced to go to the offshore market to borrow. And that served two purposes. It was, in many respects, an attempt to circumvent regulations at home, but then it also helped to make the leverage issue that's been rising in the property markets in China an international issue, which helped to just ensure that China isn't going to have to face this problem alone, that whatever problem China has is going to be an international problem. And that furthers a geopolitical ambition as well. Well, when we think about then what's going on, the problem, of course, is that nobody really knows how big the off-balance sheet liabilities are, because property markets in China have been rallying for a long time, and for almost equally as long there have been measures implemented on occasion, although never really in a serious manner, to try and stop that speculation. But over the course of the last decade, there have been lots of different attempts to try and stop property investors from leveraging up. None of them have been particularly successful. And these property companies have come up with ever more convoluted ways of getting the credit that they want, which means that their off-balance sheet liabilities are, in all likelihood, considerably larger than meets the eye in a casual just appraisal of what their outstanding liabilities are from the bond market. And that's where the real risk of contagion resides. So the Hang Seng, which of course is heavily weighted by properties, was also down in a dynamic manner in here today. And then we're also now starting to see that there is additional selling pressure coming through in just about all other stock markets. So the Nikkei was closed in here today, so was mainland China, but everywhere else was down in the order of between 1 and 2%. One thing that I think is relevant as we look at this pullback, and we haven't seen a pullback of this size for Wall Street in a while, is that the VIX index has popped on the upside. And on every occasion in the course of the last year when it has popped on the upside, it's been a buying opportunity. So we can look then at what the contagion risk is. How big is this risk of contagion? And what does it mean for the Chinese market in particular? But then we can also look at what's happening on Wall Street. And we've had a significant pullback, and it has certainly broken the sequence of higher reaction lows, so less consistent than it has been. But it is now closing off the low. The VIX index has eased somewhat, and what that would suggest is that a large number of investors have been conditioned to buy the dip, and that process of buying the dip has worked on every occasion since the lows back in March of 2020. So, in order for us to have a significantly larger pullback, well, then that attempt to buy the dip after something in the order of a 3 to 5% pullback will have to fail. And what that suggests is that the lows put in today would have to be taken out in order to fulfill some of the more bearish prognostications. Like Mike Wilson has been quite clear that he anticipates that the transfer from the initial advance off the lows will eventually contribute to a 20% pullback. So if we can just look at what happened in 2010 and 11, the pullbacks that we saw in 2011 were in response to the end of quantitative easing. And it was the initial hurdle over which the bull market had to get before we initially saw these big advances in between these medium-term corrections. So, in order to have one of these, we wouldn't just necessarily have to have a problem arise in China, but also we'd have to see tapering. Well, and this is the offshore renminbi, but the renminbi is now weakening, and it is trading weaker than the 200-day moving average, and the dollar index, having been quite firm earlier on in the day, did not hold its advance. And we're certainly seeing that government bond yields are starting to come back down, and that there is certainly pressure coming to build on the commodity complex. So investors are beginning to price in that there is potential here for a deflationary force. Now, if we're going to have more deflation because of downward pressure that we're starting to see in the commodity complex, and copper was weaker in here today, and in the latter part of the day, we had initially seen a benign environment in the oil market, but oil prices were down about a dollar in here today. But again, pairing the decline towards the end of the day. So we're seeing the beginning of some contagion risk from China. But At the same time, investors have been conditioned to buy the dip. So, on the one hand, there are growing risks and there are growing concerns about what the problem is in China. And when we look at, for example, the significant pullback that we've seen in iron ore, well, then it would be easy to jump to the conclusion that something really disastrous is happening in terms of the Chinese economy, but there is a justifiable rationale that China is preparing for the Winter Olympics in February, so they are cutting back on production of steel and aluminium and on coal mining in an attempt to ensure that there are clear skies over Beijing for the beginning of the Winter Olympics. So that is at least in part a rationale for why we have volatility in commodity prices, and not necessarily representative of the risk of contagion. I would say that in order to monitor the risk of contagion and the potential for a deleterious knock-on effect for the wider economy, we should be paying particular attention to both copper and oil, since China is the majority consumer of both, and one is very much more tied to clean energy, that's copper, and then of course oil is representative of economic activity. So if oil prices experience a significant decline, well then that will obviously filter down into the perception that there is a wider risk evolving from China. When we think about what's been going on in Europe, we've had a significant pullback as well in here today. So it does suggest that if we're going to see a continued buy the dip, well, then this is a sufficiently large dip. And we have a history of these ranges dipping into one another. So the low today should hold if this is a buy the dip strategy, or this is a victory for the buy the dip environment that's prevailed for a year. On the other hand, if it fails, well, then we're moving into a much more volatile period. But of course, the bigger question here is that if China is going to go through a rather difficult time overall, well, isn't it valid to think that we're less likely to have an inflationary environment immediately? So gold prices continue to steady here from the $1,750 area. Now it has a lot of work to do in order to defray the risks from these big downward dynamics we've seen on repeated occasions since October of last year. But I think it is worth also reminding ourselves that since December, the price hasn't really gone anywhere. There's been a lot of back and forth, and yet the price is pretty much range bound. And in all that time, there has been a lot of money printed, and there's been a very impressive advance in stocks. But inflationary pressures are starting to rise. And then the problem in China, that potentially reintroduces the risk of deflation. And the one thing that central banks have been most vocal about is the need to withdraw liquidity. I've been questioning how on earth they can manage that. And particularly if there's a deflationary risk coming through from China, well, it really does then push out the timetable again on when monetary policy can begin to be normalized. So that's beneficial for gold, and it suggests that we are potentially coming through with another higher reaction low. But again, it has a lot of work to do in order to begin to convince investors that we're coming out of this corrective phase. I remain of the view that we are coming out of this corrective phase, but we will not have a clear confirmation of that fact until prices are sustaining a move above the $1,825 area. So we're still away from that, but at least we're seeing at least some evidence of support coming through in here today. Silver prices were also steady, but Palladium continues to pull back and is doing so in a violent manner. It hasn't quite halved yet from the peak in May, but it's not all that far away from it either. And of course, this is also in response to the delays that we're seeing in the production of internal combustion engine vehicles. So with less vehicles being produced, there's less demand for palladium for catalytic converters. But of course, that's also it's contributing to price appreciation in both new and used vehicles in the short term. But ultimately, that's not particularly inflationary because if there's less production taking place, well then it means that there's still demand. When we see the end of these bottlenecks, well then prices should moderate again, and that's also feeding through to this transitory inflation environment. But then we can think about lumber prices, where not quite limit down today, but certainly close to that. I remain very much of the view that we're going to see higher prices prevail for longer, that we're in a new price floor environment, and that it's unlikely that prices are going to be sustainably below $400 anytime soon. So what we've essentially seen is a step change in the overall pricing environment for commodities. We're in a very tenuous position in terms of stocks because we've had the pullbacks, and we're starting to see some evidence of dip buying coming through, but there are certainly risks that remain outstanding with regard to China. And we're also seeing that some of the commodity-related markets are pulling back. South Africa pulled back in a violent manner over the course of the last couple of weeks. The BlackRock World Mining Trust has also pulled back. That's also in direct response to the weakness that we're seeing in the iron ore market. If we think about Glencore, which does not produce iron ore, the effect has been less pronounced, but nonetheless, it is coming back into the region of the trend mean. So, I think it's very important to pay attention to what's happening more in the property markets rather than some of the individually weak commodity markets, because there are two separate themes not necessarily connected, particularly with regard to China right now, because one is the preparation for the Olympics and the other is the efforts to curtail the property market speculation. Of course, ultimately, the only way that China is going to curtail that kind of speculation is if they introduce a property tax. Of course, introducing a property tax would increase the cost of holding property, so it would greatly incentivize the people who own multiple properties to start renting them out, and of course, that would then start to introduce rental yields as a more relevant consideration in the pricing of property, and valuations are unencumbered by that kind of valuation at present. So it would greatly increase the supply into the market. But then additionally, a property tax would create less of an incentive for local governments to engage in land sales. So that's been the primary way that they've been able to fund themselves over the course of the last 30 years. So it's very hard to really envisage how China is going to get control of their property market until they introduce a property tax. And of course, it would be a massive revenue raiser and also potentially deflationary in focus. So certainly there's a very active market in the potential eventualities from a China Evergrande bankruptcy. I think it is likely that they're going to allow it to become bankrupt, but then they'll begin to introduce measures to forestall the risk of greater contagion. And if that is indeed what happens, well, then there's certainly the potential that this is a buy-the-dip environment for the wider stock market. So we're certainly at a very interesting juncture for markets. The big lightning rods for speculation like the Bitcoin price and the SPACs and IPOs were certainly weaker in here today. Bitcoin was down $3,800. It moved to a new reaction low. The challenge right now is that the big downside key reversal put in 2 weeks ago looks like a lower rally high. So we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and now we've had a period of right-hand extension, and the price is starting to pull back once more. So Bitcoin has an awful lot of work to do to begin to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, and we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside until we see clear upward dynamics to support the demand-dominated argument. Ethereum was also down in a dynamic manner today, down in the order of about 10%, so coming back down below the 3,000 level. So it got up to 4,000, tested the peak from back in May, and now coming back to 3,000. It's off the lows in much the same way that we've seen on Wall Street, but it has certainly a lot of work to do in order to confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.